The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions. Unfiltered
opinions. I'm Jimmy Moya.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Good morning. Welcome to yet another episode of Insider Exchange. Welcome to Market Matters. Of course, live streamed for your viewing pleasure every Monday morning, with the rest of the show set to drop later in the week. We are into August. We are officially into the second half of the year, having gone through the bulk and the entirety of July. And we're on that gentle slide down towards December. Because that's what the rest of the year is, right? We start thinking about it now because it's been a very, very long year. This week on the show, we are going to take a look at some market matters. We're going to be looking at the outcomes of the tariff or reciprocal tariffs from the US's perspective. We're going to be looking at last week's inflationary conversation from the South African Reserve Bank and the awkwardness that that has created. And we're going to look at Trump's latest temper tantrum in firing some people. That's what's coming up on Market Matters. As for the rest of the show, in the deep dive, we are going to do something quite interesting. We're going to do our little bit as civil servants, that being civil servants to you, our insider community, and see if we can find creative ways to fund Formula One. And then, of course, we're going to wrap up the show with Investor Insights. We're going to be taking a look at some very interesting leases that the South African government or South African or certain South African departments have had in place for many, many years, and whether or not they still make sense. And then, of course, there's an unfiltered opinion of the week at the end of the show. So stick around for that. Before we get into Market Matters, the names continue. We have a new set of names. They are still Irish themed. And while we are on the Irish themed names, a quick shout out to one of the online content creators who has a simple Irish name, and we appreciate that about him. Garen, you know who you are. Very, very popular Irish content creator. Does fantastic work. His tagline at the end of his videos is, "Follow me, I'm delicious."
Yes, I know.
Absolutely love Garen. But shout out to Garen for having the simplest Irish name, because the ones that we found this week simply don't make sense. Sai, you are?
Eoghan.
Eoghan. Eoghan is the spelling for those that are listening to the audio podcast. And the pronunciation is?
Eoghan.
Owen.
Oh. Hey, I could almost believe that. I mean.
I, on the other hand, am A-O-I-F-E.
A-O-F.
No. I am Aoife.
Aoife.
There we go, right? So, weird Irish names, weird spellings. Okay. We finally found it. We've cracked the code. Once again, the gentleman at Starbucks that was making the coffees this morning couldn't be bothered to ask about the spelling of the pronounced names. Just said, just tell me what to write on the cup. So, that's how we do it, right? That's how we crack the code. Get Irish names and now nobody knows how to spell them. But let's get straight into Market Matters because we have so much to cover. And perhaps let's start with the awkwardness that came about from the Reserve Bank's perspective, because the Trump news and the US news are much bigger news, and that's going to continue to unfold.
I love this story.
So last week we came onto the show. Sai and I were debating whether or not we're going to get an interest rate cut and what it meant for inflation. We got a cut to 25 basis point, but we also got a Reserve Bank governor who said, "I want to now push to anchor inflation at 3%." And we were like, "Okay, cool, that's lovely." So this happens on Thursday afternoon around 3 p.m., maybe 3:30 ish. The next morning, Friday, there is a press release from National Treasury, and the Minister of National Treasury, Minister Enoch Godongwana, says, "We are not revising the inflation target policy. I don't appreciate that this minister, the Reserve Bank governor has spoken on policy when policy has not been decided. That is not the position of National Treasury." And this was a bit weird, right? Because now you're saying we don't necessarily support inflation targeting moving lower, despite the fact that your deputy minister a couple of months ago said exactly the opposite.
So two things. He got up, sir. But the important point is the word anchoring.
Mm.
The governor did not change our inflation target.
He did not.
Our inflation target is 3% to 6%. Mm-hmm. He reminded us in that press conference that in July of 2017, they said we are going to anchor at 4.5%.
Mm-hmm.
Massively being efficient.
Which wasn't a policy decision again.
No, it's not, because the policy decision is 3 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
The governor, and I imagine his cohorts of MPC members, have decided to anchor at 3%. That is within their mandate. For the minister to say it hasn't been a consideration is nonsense. We know it has been. We know there are talks to change. There was expectation it might happen at the midterm budget policy statement in October. He said nix, nix. So then it's happening at budget, right? In February. I mean, okay, so now we know when the announcement will be made. And then they will come out and say it's 3% and sob, and the MPC will be like, ching, ching, already there. Look, when he said it in the press conference, like, I mean, fortunately, I was sitting down because I was like, yo. But then you look at the language and you look at the mandate and you look at the rules, and he's entirely entitled to do it. It just feels almost a little bit anticlimactic that we now suddenly, I mean, we now sit in a 3% inflation target world. Roll that forward, I don't know, 5 years, because it might be a little bit bumpy now. And truthfully, it might be very bumpy and it might be painful.
Mm.
Let's say, Rand goes to 20, oil goes to 90, petrol goes to 35. Moo, our inflation goes to 5. I mean, it could get ugly.
It could.
But we're now in a 3% inflation world. And when we've sort of settled that down, it means, I mean, we're now, okay, so our developed market trading partners are at 2%. It's like we're in touching distance. I think it's huge. I think it's absolutely huge. And I think the governor and his team had every right to do it. I get why Treasury is upset, but maybe they should just have moved a little faster.
So a couple of theories around this, right? There have been a couple of smart people out there saying this is a policy mistake, this shouldn't be done, it's unrealistic to anchor it at these levels and all those sorts of things. And I can't help but wonder. So one of the main arguments that's been made is it doesn't reflect the reality of the South African story. So what South Africans are having as lived experiences doesn't reflect the 3%, right? Now, that is true to an extent. I think part of that also you need to take into account that for a South African middle class that has been strained and been under pressure, having a 3% inflation anchoring policy kind of is a good thing in the long term. Again, you've mentioned it, Sian. It's not just today. You've mentioned it before. There has to be short-term pain with this kind of adjustment, because at the moment, we've lived under the world of 4.5%. Mm. So there has to be short-term pain. In the long term, we do expect that it will be better. But I can't help but wonder if this conversation would even be a topical conversation if we were at 5% growth as a country. If we actually had real GDP growth, nobody in the economy would care that the South African Reserve Bank is reducing inflation, because it just means, we get to do more in the economy. But when your economy is so constrained, and we've spoken about this before, that any little pressure points or any little movements here and there have a significant impact. You look at something like National Treasury. If we had a 4%, or 4% economic GDP outlook or economic growth, they wouldn't be commenting, because they'd be making more money. But they're not making enough money as it is, right? And that, again, is not the fault of the Reserve Bank. And so when you're a central bank and you are independent and you have a limited toolbox with which to work with, I think our disgruntlement and our discontent is slightly misplaced. We should be upset at the fact that National Treasury isn't stimulating the economy.
Mm.
You control the budget. Mm-hmm. You're not stimulating the economy. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you're going to want to find fault with the Reserve Bank that's doing what they are tasked with doing.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, like, what are you actually trying to do here? Give us some growth. It wouldn't be a debate. To your point, if inflation was higher, we wouldn't be having it. And there is risk. I mean, Casey Sprague from Anchor.
Mm.
She's like, this could go horribly wrong. The point is, it's actually would be less horribly wrong. And to be clear, I'm not quoting Casey right now, because it's anchoring, not targeting. If we set, let's say inflation goes crazy and all those horrible stories and it's 5%. The Reserve Bank, they would look a little silly, but they could unanchor or re-anchor at a new point. Whereas if the target is 3,
then we've got a problem.
I mean, one is like anchor, it's writing in pencil. The other is like target, it's like chiseling in stone.
Mm.
Maybe this is actually a nice way to sort of, let's try 6 months of this 3%. Now, truthfully, 6 months isn't very long, but let's try a bit of this 3% and see how it goes. I
agree. So I think it's very much a...
It means we're goods going double to in price every 25 years.
We're going to change the policy without directly changing the policy. I think it's a very tactical move on the part of the Reserve Bank to say, we're simply staying within our mandate, except we're going to the lower end of our range instead of the higher end or the midpoint, and we're allowed to be anywhere in that range because that's the prescribed range according to National Treasury. Shout out to Jimbo, joined us as well on our live stream. stream chat. Jimbo's got a new job.
Hey,
congratulations, Jimbo.
Cool,
congratulations.
Cool.
Well done, well done. US matters. As we look at US matters. That tariff announcement, officially, it's not really an announcement. It was an announcement in April. We had a deadline. The deadline was the 1st of August when tariffs would be implemented. And I want to get into that. Before I get into that, I want to look at the conversation that we had last week where you mentioned, Si, that Trump was bullying and we don't like bullies, right? Mm. And someone in our TikTok community, Cindy, had a comment about that. She said, and I quote, "I love this. America is the bully that needs the Simon, aka the China muscle. I now support BRICS power to weaken his superpower. Russian mindset is far greater than his, but US technology is far greater. Hence, his power source against other nations. Simon, it's the time to pay Trump a visit and show him your muscles. Sending you love and appreciation, Cindy."
Yeah, I'm not... Cindy, love you. Not going to the US.
Why not? It could be a very... I'll bring the video cameras. We can record the whole interaction. Could be fun.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Yeah. Two Africans, one white, one not. This is going to go down like a...
Well, look, we'd be proving to Trump that there's no racism. So short of something happening to you and me being blamed for it...
Which is... Yeah, I think I'm busy that weekend. But it is. Yeah. So America's been the bully, but they've been the soft power bully. Mm. And under Trump, and to be clear, what we're approaching, we're past 6 months, but like there's a long way to go still. We are getting the hard power, slam things around. We're certainly seeing it with tariffs.
Well, it's because someone gave him a pen and told him he can sign executive orders.
And some of them are, I mean, we've discussed the Brazil one where basically he's trying to interfere in their judiciary, which... I don't know. That seems quite bad. But then he did. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, he is bullying. But he's not just bullying trade partners. He's bullying everyone. I mean, you know, to the point that he fired the head of the Bureau of Labor Stats on Friday because he didn't like the data. Which, let's be clear, this has happened before, right? Turkey. Mm. Zimbabwe.
Yeah, but it's America, so they're allowed to...
Well, no, but here's the thing. So now they're going to put a new person in charge of the Bureau of Labor.
Who's going to read the same data.
But we're all going to look at it and say, how do we trust it? Mm-hmm. Now, to be clear, the head of the BLS is not the person who compiles it. In fact, they only see the data a few days before, and then it gets polished, and then the final number goes to the president the night before. You know that he spent all of Thursday night on the phone to this person trying to get them to change the numbers. I mean, isn't that, I don't know, China, like bad numbers you got there. Be a shame if you died over them. I mean, you know, something like that. I mean, like we are not even hop, skips, and jumps. It starts to say that we don't... I can't believe I'm saying it. Can we trust American data? Because we know that if a number Trump doesn't like, he's going to try and get it changed. And if he can't, he will fire the person so that he can put someone more compliant in his space. So, for example, the Fed rate decision on Wednesday wasn't consensus for the first time in like 30 years. Because two of Trump's ponies decided, no, we must cut rates. And
so, side note, Jimbo says to us in our chat, he likens Trump to a baby who's discovered a pen for the first time. He's scribbling everywhere, which has actual consequences.
Yeah.
It does feel that way, though.
It does, except that the baby's just scribbling on your wall and you can paint it.
Yeah, but unfortunately, that wall is a bunch of executive orders.
Well, I know, in Trump's
case. And for now, you can't paint for 5 years.
Not that many years.
Well, are you going to impeach the man? It doesn't look like it.
No, but also, they get four-year terms.
Oh, sorry, they get 4-year terms, but we're 6 months into a 4-year term with a president who has previously survived 2 impeachments.
And fun fact, so he made the Smithsonian take down... So the Smithsonian has a thing on presidents who have been impeached, which is Carter, Clinton, and...
Trump.
I think somebody else. Anyway, they made him take the Trump down. 1,265.
To go.
I know.
No.
Yes, I mean,
that's just it. We can't still have more than 1,000 days of this to deal with.
Gent, it's got to be like it's going to be April of next year until it's less than 1,000 days. And to be clear, it's currently only August.
Okay, so in that, right, let's perhaps look at the tariff conversation as well and what's happening now with the tariff announcements. There was an announcement, obviously, a confirmation of when the tariffs would take effect. Friday, the 1st of July was the date. Now we're hearing reports that from a South African perspective, we've negotiated a 7-day extension of sorts, and now our tariffs are technically only coming to effect on the 7th of August or something of the sort. That's this Thursday, right? So that means we have 3 days to anchor in a deal that we haven't been able to do over 2 months. And I want to get into that from a South African perspective. Other nations, and the reason I want to look at it from an SA perspective is if we're looking at it from an African continent perspective, right? Mm-hmm. I just want to give you some data. Mm-hmm. There were amounts or percentages announced in April when the tariff announcements were made. And then there was the confirmed
Liberation Day.
And then there's the confirmed rate that took place now as
of 1 August, right? Mm-hmm. Of the African countries, pretty much all of the African countries except 4 got reduction, right? Now, the countries like Angola, Botswana, Cameroon, Chad, Cote d'Ivoire, DRC, Equatorial Guinea, Ghana, Lesotho, Madagascar, Malawi, Mauritius, Mozambique, Namibia, Nigeria, and Uganda all mm-hmm. got reductions mm-hmm. from what was initially proposed as an amount. So Lesotho, as an example, biggest winner there.
Yeah, yeah.
50% down to 15%. Yeah. Only 4 countries were denied reductions by this tariff implementation. Algeria, Libya, Tunisia, and South Africa.
Yo.
It's very telling as to 4 countries. In Algeria's case, 30% became 30%, right? Mm-hmm. Libya, 31 to 30, fine. Tunisia, actually even Tunisia got a reduction, 28 down to 25. South Africa, 30 stayed at 30. Now my question then becomes at this point, how did we not do enough to get this thing over the line? Because
this is not about negotiations and engagements. This is about Trump just not liking us. And we've said this, we've had this before. Why doesn't he like us? Well, can we list the reasons? We're killing white farmers. No, we're not. BEE, stop trampling on our own sovereignty. I mean, you might not like BEE, but you don't
have
want
it in
a
place.
Third party
yes.
to come and tell you about it. Iran, Israel, etc., etc. He doesn't like South Africa. And, you know, I think it's thanks to 2 things. It's thanks to Elon Musk, who probably whispered something in his ear around the genocide, and the G20. If it wasn't for those 2, he wouldn't know where
he wouldn't
we
care.
Are. Remember when he talked about Namibia?
Mm.
Like, he would have just called us, you know, South whatever.
Something.
Unfortunately, you know, my grandfather always said to me, don't put your head above the pulpit. Like mm-hmm. keep your head down.
Mm.
We put our head up.
We did. I suppose we did. We did with
Trump is shooting at it.
So I bring this up because right now, as of 10 o'clock this morning, a couple of minutes ago, there's a joint ministerial press briefing between Durco and the DTIC currently taking place.
Mm.
Now, we'll obviously find out the details of that when we stop our live stream and when we can kind of dig into that, because we don't want to disturb our own stream, right? And also, it's unlikely that what's going to be discussed there.
A quick flash coming across is working on measures to mitigate potential job losses, working to block exemptions on block exemption. We are working, but with new high growth markets in Asia and Middle East, including the short answer is he's just not taking our calls. He's blue ticking us.
So here's the thing, right? On that, the president said something quite interesting this morning in his presidential briefing and letter that goes out. Or I think it's the weekly newsletter from the president's mm-hmm. desk, right? And it was saying that I'm trying to find the exact wording here. It's here. I've got it in front of me, but I'm trying to find the exact wording. And this for me was something that I had a lot of questions around as to, you know, what's happening. It was something about we remain open to engagements, right?
South Africa will continue to use diplomatic channels to negotiate a mutually beneficial trade deal with the United States.
No, it wasn't that. It was further down in that same statement. And it basically gave a very, I want to say it left the taste that we are sitting here waiting for the United States to talk to us. So yes, they've blue-ticked us. Mm. But if somebody's blue-ticked you and they've already taken a decision, you should be knocking on their door harder, right? This really matters to us as much as our government says it does.
Yeah, but we can't
to sit back quietly and do nothing and say, but we're waiting for them to let us talk.
We don't
to them.
Have a diplomat in America right now because Ramaphosa is, I assume,
because we appointed a gentleman that wasn't going to be accepted by the United States in the first place.
Correct. And I suppose the president is applying his mind.
He's been applying his mind for an awfully long time.
He's slow like that.
Okay. In the meantime,
I have no other answer.
In the meantime, South African businesses lose millions in contracts. I saw one of the South African businesses saying overnight, a company lost around 750 million in contracts because of the new tariff adjustments. Now, bigger businesses might be able to suffer these sorts of losses in order books and in pipeline, but smaller and medium-sized businesses can ill afford this, especially because some of the order book agreements are what I'm basing my financing on. And now I've got financing commitments I need to adhere to that now suddenly set setting up an emergency export desk is not going to solve the problem. I feel like there needs to be a little more urgency towards this matter.
Yeah, and it's not just, I mean, you know, the impact results are out this morning, and one of their businesses that's been doing really well is selling the containers that the citrus goes in so it can be exported. Now, you know, impact can probably take it. They've got an underlying operating profit of over 300 million, EBITDA of over 600 million. They can kind of afford it, but it's still going to hurt a business which, you know, when you operate offering in the South African market, and if you're making money, like you are like rock star, and this just makes it harder.
It really does. And as we wrap up the conversation, because we are unfortunately out of time for the live stream, I want to take a look at the markets and how the markets have been responding. From a Rand perspective, we're back below 17. We're back below 18 Rand, right? So we're at 17.99 after having kind of tapped 18.40 last week. So clearly the Rand is responding positively to how markets have come in, or the 30% that was priced in has now kind of been fully priced into the market, to the extent that the market is saying, well, we now know what the worst case scenario is in South Africa's case, right? Mm-hmm. That being said, the top 40 bounced off of 90,000 points. We're still at about 9,800. But for context, at highs, we were at 93,000 points, and we've just come off those highs because of obviously the tariff implementations. The local markets seemingly are shrugging off as much of this as they can.
Less than 2% off the highs.
Yeah, but from a business perspective, I think when we start to see and feel the impact and the ripple effects on businesses being unable to export, businesses losing profitabilities and revenues and going through the pain, then suddenly it's, and at that point it'll be way too late to say, let's correct the situation. So I can appreciate that we've set up the export support desk or whatever it is that we're calling it, but I want to dig into this briefing, and we'll do that as we wrap up the live now. I want to dig into the briefing and find out really what our government is doing to mitigate this, because some might say they're not doing enough.
I would argue that. Look, I appreciate it's not easy, but like, we got tariffs. We haven't done enough. Next question, surely.
So Incognito has jumped onto our chat and says that rumor has it that we are taking notes from Swaziland and planning to house US jailbirds just to score some diplomatic brownie points. See, Incognito, that is, you know what, there's so many concerns around that, but
I don't know. I mean, has anyone ever escaped out of CMAX?
Ananias Mate, rumored to have done it with Vaseline. Yeah, no, that's just one example. We are not the case study for being able to do that. But what we might be the case study for, as you bring up CMAX, is something that we potentially would dive into at another time. Shout out to TikTok community. Maybe you guys can weigh in on this. I'm going to leave it as our punchline for Market Matters as we wrap up the Market Matters segment. Should we repurpose? And I saw this somewhere online. I unfortunately cannot credit the creator of this because I refreshed my feed. And, you know, that's what TikTok does, right? So don't refresh your feed, apparently. Should we repurpose Robben Island into an Ibiza and a party island because we're not using it? And does that affect our heritage as a country?
Yes and yes.
There we go. Size spoken. That's Market Matters. We're going to leave it on that note. We're going to get into the deep dive and investor insights. As we said, we're going to be diving into funding Formula One. It's going to be a very interesting deep dive. Stick around for that. But for now, that's Market Matters, folks. In our deep dive this week, we are diving into something quite interesting. Si and I thought we would do a little bit of civil service duty and see if we could help fund the Formula One. Now, this has been quite a contentious topic for the longest time, or at least since we have found out that we could potentially be back at grade one status on Kyalami, and we could potentially be in the running to host a Formula One race. We know there are many, many Formula One fans out there, myself and Si included. Shout out to all the Formula One fans. There's a very special Formula One fan that is the reason I am a Formula One fan out there, and that is my father. He got me into Formula One at a very, very early age. So I suppose this segment is dedicated to all of the Formula One fans that would want to know how we'd get there. So our problem
is that we support Ferrari. I've told you this. If there were two cars in the race and both were Ferrari, they would come third.
You mentioned that. And as you mentioned that, I think back to an iconic moment that I don't know has been repeated in history since it's happened. And it was a Formula One race. I'm trying to remember which circuit it was, where it was in the era of Ferrari dominance. And you've actually got a photo finish. Two cars alongside one another. Michael Schumacher, Rubens Barrichello, across the finish line. I don't think that moment has ever been repeated in Formula One history.
No, I'm going to find it.
You're going to find it.
yeah.
But they have been iconic moments, right? So they've been, there was that moment back in the day. There was also the moment that Lewis Hamilton won, I believe it was Silverstone, if I'm not wrong. I think it was Silverstone, won a Grand Prix on three tires.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I remember that.
And it was in the season that he won a championship as well. And so it was one of those moments where these are iconic moments that live forever, right? And they will always be around. Whether you're a new Formula One fan or an old Formula One fan, whether you believe in these DRS things that they've got going on, or you remember what a traditional V10 engine used to sound like, right? Mm. Formula One is iconic as it is, and South Africa has a unique opportunity to bring it to Africa once again. Now, our problem, and this is where we start this discussion. Problem statement. statement is we need to finance the licensing of Formula One. So I had the privilege of speaking to one Toby Fenter, who is the chairman of the Porsche group. He's the chairman of LMS Distributors, owners of Kyalami. And we had a conversation around the Formula One and what everything would cost and what it would take. And so we're working on rough numbers here. So please don't hold us to the numbers because exchange rate fluctuations and all sorts of other things. But it would cost us about 180 million to go from grade two to grade one in terms of maintenance costs to upgrade the circuit and add those runoff areas that need to be added. 180 million, folks, in the scheme of what we're about to discuss is nothing. Mm-hmm. It is change that the Kyalami team can finance themselves out of their own pockets and we move on, right?
Yeah.
So our problem statement is that we need a license and the licensing fee is paid to the FIA. Now we've estimated this for licensing fee ranges everywhere from $25 million to say, I think $40 million. So we're going to work with a rough number of $30 million at an exchange rate of 18 rand. 540 million rand per year must be paid to the FIA for licensing rights of the Formula One. We're not talking infrastructure setup, nothing else. Sure. Just for the right to hold the license.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's crazy, right?
It's crazy, but
it's not unreasonable. And I say it's not unreasonable because the exercise we're about to get into is we're going to see if we can find that money. Now, a couple of disclaimers ahead of time. We are looking at the national budget because in other countries, the licensing fee is typically covered by the government. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the running costs, operational costs, accommodations, all of that sit within the private sector. And that drives things like tourism and jobs and all those other things. Mm-hmm. So the government's main responsibility here, what we're saying is if they cover the licensing fee, then the private sector should be able to cover the rest of it because the private sector has the money to cover the rest of it, right? Mm-hmm. And we create benefits for South Africans. Mm. I think a lot of people look at Formula One and like, oh no, it's a spectator sport. You can't be investing this much money into that sort of thing. I see it, and maybe this is because I've done eventing before. If you have a good event, eventing can be an exceptionally profitable business in its own right. If you're able to manage your costs and extract value out of that in terms of ROI, you can actually make a difference. You can pay people, you can hire people. It creates a lot of temporary work, some permanent work and all of that. Eventing can make a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
So we're looking at this as an event. And our only goal for this discussion is to cover the licensing fees, because we're assuming that once that's covered, the rest of the private sector can be lobbied to cover the rest of the fees, right? In looking at this, when we look at the cuts from a budget perspective at a national level, this is part of the disclaimers. We will not be cutting monies from essential services because
health,
we can't do
education,
that.
Education,
we can't
security.
Do that. We're not allowed to touch the things that South Africans need the most. That is the purpose of our exercise here. We can cut from other areas that we happen to find along the way and based on the numbers that we know, right? I'll kick us off lightly. And lightly is the amount of bailouts for state-owned entities.
Oof.
Right. So in the...
SAA got what? How many billions?
So in...
Because we could argue Eskom's important.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong. I love the SAA lounges and mm-hmm. they've got more leg room than, mm-hmm. than Don't Fly SAFair. Actually, they're flying again. I'll take that back.
Yeah.
But like... But that's gone, surely. I mean, that money's now gone. I don't know.
Yeah, so we're looking at the history of bailouts. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we can't assume that the history will reflect the future bailouts that mm-hmm. we're going to see, because the minister said no more bailouts, despite giving Transnet a 96 billion rand state guarantee the other day.
Yeah.
Right? So from the bailouts, I want to look at that. The 96 billion rand state guarantee for Transnet. Transnet is an essential service. We're not saying don't give them 96 billion rand in guarantees if you need to, because we need the logistics channel and the logistics infrastructure.
Yes.
The post office has asked for 3.7 billion rand to be bailed out, despite the fact that they haven't cut executive salaries and they've cut a myriad of jobs at a lower to middle income level, right? In addition to that, the post office, former CEO Mark Barnes, had come onto our show. I remember coming onto our radio show mentioning that when he left the post office, it was in a profitable state, mm-hmm. right? So the 3.7 billion rand bailout that the post office is looking for now there, some of the bailouts that Eskom is looking for, what the debt that Eskom gets transferred onto the balance sheet, all of those sorts of things. From state owned bailouts, we can safely assume that several hundreds of billions are being taken out of state owned bailouts, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am proposing mm-hmm. that for one, and again, sorry, part of the disclaimers that we're doing, we're only adjusting one fiscal year of government expenditure and seeing how far we can drag that money, right? I propose from government bailouts, whatever bailouts bailouts were going to go to state-owned entities. We cut that amount, or we reduce that amount in totality by 2 billion or 2.5 billion. And I'll come back to why. Only 2.5 billion. So that probably means that instead of a Transnet getting a 96 billion rand guarantee, they get a 94 billion or 93 billion rand guarantee, right? So we can do it from one entity, right? Hmm. 2.5 billion doesn't seem excessive, does it, Si?
No,
I'm not being excessive here.
No.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So there's 2.5 billion. Cool.
But we only need half a billion.
No. We're doing this exercise with a purpose, right? So half a billion only gets us the Formula One license for 1 year, right?
Good point.
So we're going to see how much of 1 year's expenditure we can get cut off and how far that can take us with the licensing, because then we can start to discuss the ripple effect of having Formula One in South Africa for 5 years, for 10 years kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. The other areas that exist out there that might not be considered essential by some people might consider this essential to their lives, others might not. I'm looking at the fleet procurements for ministerial vehicles and
these
the like.
To get like a luxury German sedan in Pretoria and another one in Cape Town.
Right. And that amount.
Now, if Transnet was working, we could put it on a train and overnight it.
You could. You could move the. Exactly. Yeah, so,
just saying.
On that, on the reduction of the luxury fleets and or the luxury vehicles, right? There's been a recent. I bring it up because there's been a recent adjustment by the minister that you can now. I think the previous limit was an 800,000 Rand vehicle. Mm-hmm. It's now been bumped up to, I think, a 1.1 million Rand vehicle.
And they should get an Amondo CS5 for 330.
No, we're at a 1.1 million Rand vehicle. Now, conservatively assuming...
And to be clear, per city.
Per city, per individual that is qualifying for these sorts of things, right? Now, to be perfectly clear, we don't know how many of these vehicles... I mean, I suppose some ministers or some individuals are allocated one, others are allocated more than one and those sorts of things. But we assume one per minister, per portfolio, right? Mm-hmm. And let's say, for the sake of this conversation, on all of those, we're able to cut back perhaps 500 million.
Okay.
I think that's a reasonable amount that we can achieve, right? Mm-hmm. Again, we're only adjusting for one financial year.
Yeah.
So we're up to 3 billion.
So they can just use their car for a year longer.
Right. So we're up to 3 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next, let's take a look at perhaps the travel and accommodation, because that's come up quite a bit recently. There's been conversations around the excessive travel perks and whether or not people are spending money and shouldn't be and those sorts of things. Now, travel is discretionary. I understand that a part of it from a state security point of view is, and you can only appreciate this when you have an appreciation of how complex state security can get, right? So I understand the rationale behind having multiple
so
planes.
Gaten McKenzie goes somewhere, it's not just Gaten.
Yes. So in that situation, I understand some of the mechanics around saying we can't have a Gaten and his deputy fly at the same time on the same plane for cost saving measures, because it is a security risk. If something were to happen to that plane, you've lost both people in that portfolio. It's a security nightmare and all those things.
We might
We don't put the president and the deputy on the same flight
but we would notice if, well, it depends which one went missing.
But this is not a South African policy. International governments do this.
Who the parents won't fly on the same plane.
CEOs do this as well. This is a known policy to protect. It's almost like a survival thing, right? If something were to happen, it's disaster management and preparedness, right? So we're not saying that some of the expenditure isn't warranted. So let's say from that, I mean, so far this year, we've spent just north of, I'd say 200, 250 odd million Rand there, right? So let's say from there, we save perhaps 100 million on the travels.
Okay.
Of all of the cabinet portfolios and all of those things, right? That 100 million doesn't seem like it's going to do much. So we're at about 3.1 billion at the moment, right? So the 100 million we can kind of write off as admin costs. Maybe we can repurpose that somewhere else. So we're still just above 3 billion, right? Let's quickly, let's get over the line very quickly, right? Let's wrap it up with an extra 2 billion saved from VIP security. Now, this is, again, contentious topic. We can argue certain people need VIP security, like the president of the country, that would make logical sense. Whether you need a 14-car convoy or a 6-car convoy, that's open for debate. That is a security conversation that we can, you know, have wherever. And please, those in our community that have their thoughts around this, we'd love for you to weigh in. Because a lot of people say it's wasteful expenditure. A lot of people say blue lights don't make sense, but they're there.
Who gets the VIP? I mean, I get our president should get some blue lights.
Yes. So currently, based on, and I don't know how much of this has been adjusted for 2025, but if I remember correctly, correctly, I did an exercise around this at the start of 2024. VIP protection served about 280 individuals.
They?
Less than 300 people were at a cost
that
of...
It seems like a lot of people. I don't know. 280? I mean, I'm thinking...
Well, in a country of 60 million, right?
No, so, sure. But I mean, I'm thinking, okay, so I mean, I'm thinking we've got a president, I suppose the deputy. Mm-hmm. We could be generous and give it to ministers, and we got a lot of those. So I'm up to 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
Who else?
Okay, so I'm going to pull up the numbers that I'd done when I'd done this exercise, right? So when I'd looked at this, and I'd kind of done it a while ago to say, what is the expenditure? Where does it go? And all of that. So I can actually pull some of that data. But again, as I said, this might be a little bit dated and the figures might be a little different at the moment. The 2024 year, and this data kind of stays consistent throughout, right? There was around 3.4 billion rand, with a B, spent on VIP protection and security, right? The 280 odd individuals that I mentioned accounted for about 2 billion rand of that 3.4 billion rand, right? So that works out, if you have to average it out per person, to 7.14 million rand per individual per year, right? So what we're proposing here is for one financial year, just one, folks, just one, that 2 billion gets redirected towards F1. So you won't have your blue lights, you won't have, only for 12 months. You'll get it back after the year. We promise you'll get it back after the year. And that 2 billion, coupled with the other 3 billion that we found, puts us at 5 billion. 5.1 with the 100,000
and all of that.
Right? So
that's 10 years.
No, we are 300 million rand short for 10 years because it's about 540 over 10 years. A couple of rounding errors here and there.
Some interest.
Okay, fine.
Put it and call it F&B.
Right. So we're at 10 years, right? What can we do as an economy with 10 years of hosting this event? And would it justify cutting 1 year of expenditure from certain departments?
Yeah. So, I mean, I quickly ran a number and I was working in the 500 million. Assume 200,000 people attend.
Okay.
And that would be locals. And I mean, like, I don't know a person who hasn't yet contacted me and said, I'm staying with you in Joburg when F1 comes. I'm like, guys, like, my flat's...
I don't have space, but
my
okay.
My flat's not that big, but assuming it will be in summer, we've got a balcony.
Yeah.
So 200,000 people, if they spend 2.5 grand each, that's...
2,500 rand or rand. US dollars? Not US dollars.
Not ZAR.
Okay. 2,500 rand, yes.
Which is frankly not even probably, that's probably the ticket price. There's your half a billion. But let's say they're actually going to spend $2,500 each because there's going to be food and accommodation and tickets.
So $2,500 at 18 puts us over 50.
That takes us to $500 million.
Okay.
I can't do the math of how many trillions.
$500 million self-finances this event. It self-finances this license over the 10-year period in the first year.
Yeah. And it benefits the economy. So Airbnbs and hotels and restaurants and Uber drivers and all these people will just have more activity. And some people will stay and visit Cradle of Humankind or Kruger or Cape Town, etc. Some people, like my nephew, will come up and try and get a kid's ticket. And he won't spend anything. But like, you know, that's not out of realm of reason.
So the average spend on everything excluding travel costs is between $500 and $1,000 for some of these races. In other places, it can go up to $5,000. So I think your $2,500 estimate isn't
a little high.
No, it's not. I don't think it's unreasonable, right? So let's contextualize your $2,500 commitment in rand terms. At the moment, let's call it 45,000 rand, right? Mm-hmm. 45,000 rand is something you spend for, it's one race weekend because you're not traveling with the Formula One and all of that sort of stuff, right? So okay, let's say 45,000 rand is excessive for 200,000 people. I'm sure there's 200,000 people in the country that have that kind of money.
Well, and certainly they're foreigners, but I mean, for you and I don't.
Yes. For you and I, that might be worlds apart. And let's assume from a foreigner perspective that is only the foreign spend, right? Mm-hmm. And let's assume then that no South Africans attend the event and only those 200,000 foreigners mm-hmm. come in. That's 200,000 people you can sell stuff to. That's 200,000 people, like you said, that are taking Ubers, that are requiring accommodation, that are requiring local eateries to eat out at and that sort of thing. That is effectively foreign direct investment in some way or form injected into the local economy via spend and via tourism spend in one weekend, because the race doesn't last last 17 weeks or 18 weeks or whatever, right? Now, granted, here we're not looking to see if those economies just can be sustained for a year and all of that sort of stuff. Seasonality is a real thing, right? But we're looking to see if we can make a profitable event, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. So our license costs 30 million
mm-hmm.
and we assume that the dollar expenditure will generate us 500 million. Mm-hmm. That covers the license in its own. So we can take a loan from the government mm-hmm. and pay it back in mm-hmm. the same year, not incurring mm-hmm. interest, is one way to look at it. And then still, the private sector saying we're willing to put up these sorts of infrastructures and things and come to the party and create jobs and all of that. But we can go a step further and we can say that 10% of all of the revenues and earnings and everything that come in from Formula One must go towards uplifting South Africa, whether it's by creating jobs or whether it's, we can put in place those caveats for ourselves mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. we would have earned that money, right? Mm-hmm. So now we're talking about $50 million, give or take a couple of million, that can go into doing other things yeah. and supporting local yeah. communities.
And maybe, so the 200,000 number, I'm trying to find capacity at Kyle Army and I can't find it, but it probably isn't 200, because I know they give the figures, but that's always over the race weekend.
Yes.
So Hungaro Ring had 350,000, mm. but that's over 4 days.
Yes, so yes. So there's sprint race build-ups, all yeah, of that. And, yeah, that sort of stuff.
And your practices, yeah. et cetera, yeah. et cetera.
And our 2,500 figure spread up over 4 or 5 days is $500 a day. That is a reasonable spend for some people, especially for those that have the currency purchasing power that isn't the rand.
Yeah.
Right? Let's be honest. Foreign yeah. currencies go mm-hmm. a lot further mm-hmm. when you come into South Africa. Mm-hmm. So that's not an unreasonable number to get to. So the nexus of the conversation and where we're getting to is cutting back on 1 year's expenditure yeah. could finance this yeah. thing for 10 years
yeah.
and we could live with
a fortune
and make us an absolute fortune that we can put mm. back into our own people.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this is like easy math.
This is basic math.
As opposed to hard math.
But we're not prioritizing easy math decisions because then it means we have to cut back on things like VIP protection.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I go back to what we were cutting back. I mean, like in minister vehicles and travel and...
Yeah, so remember, again, for those that missed the start of the conversation, the disclaimer was we are not allowed to cut back from essential services like education, like social grants and relief there and all of that sort of stuff for what is currently considered essential expenditure, right? So mm-hmm. non-essential expenditure, and again, our view of non-essential might differ from the views of those out there, but that's what we'd love to get. Would you, as a South African, get on board with this plan, and do you think we've cut from the necessary areas? Do you think we've missed areas? Do you think we're being unreasonable in cutting 1 year's of fiscal expenditure to finance a 10-year project?
I vote yes.
You vote yes. I vote yes. Folks out there, give us your thoughts. Give us your opinions. Let us know what you think. If we have gotten our math completely haywire, please let us know. If you think we are being overly ambitious, let us know that as well. But that's the deep dive, and that's where we're going to leave it. And we wrap things up with Investor Insights. We are taking a look at some very interesting leases. Some of them date back to apartheid days. And we're going to be taking a look at the impact of those leases in today's world. This came up completely accidentally. There was a debate around what the city of Joburg wants to do with the land that is currently being leased to an entity like the Killarney Country Club. According to some reports, the Killarney Country Club is on a 2 rand per annum lease agreement until 2040. Yes, I said it slowly. 2 rand per annum per year, right? Until 2040. Now, I have nothing against the Killarney Country Club. I'm sure this is a commercial arrangement that they put in place for many, many years. In fact, this commercial arrangement was in place before the democratic dispensation of South Africa. It was renewed post the democratic dispensation and extended to 20. I think it was initially set to end around 2020 or 2025.
It was going to end in 2020. It was extended in 92.
Okay. To 2040. Right. So extended just
under
before
the apartheid regime.
There we go.
Can anyone say in Guyama Trust?
Well, see, okay. So, this is the thing. This is part of the things that we need to look at is from a commercial standpoint, does that still make sense? Now, yes,
no.
You can go fight it legally in court and say, we want to terminate this, we want to do this. But something that we've all learnt, and we've learnt this courtesy of an organization called Transnet, is there is a clause in arrangements and agreements. It's a force majeure clause that allows people to just terminate things. things, right? Now, whether or not that clause is in place in the Killarney Agreement or not, we don't know. But what we're looking at here is it time to be looking at some of these old agreements again? Is it time to be revisiting agreements that...
Some of these apartheid era, sudden lock-in just before democracy agreements? Hell yeah.
Especially,
next question.
Especially if they have ramifications on a city like city of Joburg has its own faults and flaws as to why they're not generating enough revenue from that perspective. And it's not the responsibility of someone like the Killarney Country Club to be able to generate those revenues. But one can argue quite easily that 2 rand per annum for over, if I'm not mistaken, it's over 100 hectares of land. 111.6 hectares of land, to be more specific, right? To pay 2 rand from probably about 1970 or so to 2040 in a day and age where if I could find a 2 rand lease, I'd also lock it in for 40 years.
Don't sign it now.
Exactly.
And membership discounts, I'm having a look. So we ignore the kiddies one. It goes up from sort of 10 to 30,000 a year for membership. Mostly this is all around playing golf. I don't play golf, so I've got no skin in this game.
Neither do I, so yeah.
But I mean, you got to think that that land is worth a little more than
2 rand a year.
And I know what everyone's saying is like, oh, the Killarney Club will go bust. Well, I got two views, like tough. Like if the numbers don't add up, just
you should
tough.
Run a business. Yeah.
Secondly, okay, we'll be kind. We'll just take 30% of all club fees.
Okay.
As
30% of all club fees as an alternative
it's
to
like
the 2 rand.
Takes.
Yeah. Look, at this point, even if we say 2 rand a month, the lease agreement goes to 24 rand. It's surely better than collecting 2 rand a year, right? At this point, yeah. Anything is better than that. But nonetheless, we cannot get involved in legal agreements because we are not law experts. We haven't seen the contract. We're just throwing in our 2 cents to say perhaps 2 rand per year on 111 hectares of land might be the reason why people have conversations around expropriation without compensation. And we're going to leave it on Maybe. That note because we need to get into our pick. We need to get into our unfiltered opinion of the week. And there's quite a bit to discuss. So for our pick, I thought we wouldn't add something to the wall necessarily. City Lodge last week celebrated 40 years.
And being listed or as a business?
I think it's as a business, if I'm not mistaken.
No, you're right. City Lodge, founded 1 August 1985.
There we go. Right. As Hans, a business.
Hans Enderer.
Right.
Hans.
Okay. Mm. So City Lodge recently celebrated 40 years as a business. They are very, very critical in the tourism space with their footprint and everything that they do between all of their City Lodge brands and all of that. So no one is contending around that. City Lodge, I've liked for quite some time.
Yeah, I know, but the market has been...
The market has not agreed with that. And I thought we'd look at that. I thought we'd look at that business and say, is it a management problem? Is it a returns problem? All of the businesses in the pandemic went through some suffering from a tourism and a hospitality perspective. But the likes of Tsohosan, the likes of Sun International have bounced back seemingly a lot stronger than City Lodge has.
Yeah.
City Lodge continues to be under pressure.
So there's been some challenges there. And I think partly, I mean, this used to be a 70 rand stock. It's now a 4 rand stock. And to be clear, between that, there was what the JSE called a massive dilution from their rights issue. So there were definitely some challenges there. And market, as Wayne McCurry always reminds us, has memories. A lot of people lost a lot of money on this particular stock. So there's always that. There's also that they've been doing a lot of refurbishing. So I know someone who stayed at one of their hotels and there was refurbishing happening. Now, they said to the person, sorry, he has a free night for next time. But it just wasn't a particularly grand experience.
And they've been toying around with their menu, introducing new eating options and a new dinner menu and all of that. And that's done good wonders. Well, it's done wonders for their revenues as well.
Just because you never used to be able to get... So I mean, there was very limited there. I mean, some of the city... And it depends. Are you at a road lodge or a city lodge or a town lodge a garden court? Not a garden court, the fancy ones. Anyway. And some of them just had like vending machines. I mean, I've stayed in the one outside Cape Town Airport. And it's like a vending machine in a room not much bigger than this table. But fit for purpose. So they've done a lot more with the beverage and food side, food and beverage. That's doing really well for them. They've been refurbishing a heck of a lot. And I'm with you. I used to own this stock way back in the day. I like it. And it keeps on dipping down to sort of $4. And the short answer seems to be buy it at $4 and...
That's it. So I'm looking at a chart and I'm like, since we've come up from $4 has just become its new anchor. And I don't know. Again, for a stock, as you said, that at some point was a 70 Rand stock, is 4 Rand an accurate reflection of the footprint and the performance?
The dilution has been insane.
Yes, the dilution, of course, would have to have a factor there. We can't ignore
my
that.
My daughter shows me
Let
that,
me see if I can find when the dilution took place.
No, I've got it here. So this is the most terrifying chart ever. So back in August 2020, they had 37 million shares. Then I have 562 million shares.
Mm.
And it was diluted like 12 to 1. I mean, it was massive dilution.
It was a mad,
so you could take technically the 4 rand price and say 48 rand price, but still below the 70.
Mm.
I think it's a great business. I think it's incredibly well run. To your point, Southern Sun's done much better.
Mm.
And they all have. And I remember when we got the Omicron and borders got shut down in late 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And I quickly picked up some City Lodge and some Sun Internationals. I've taken profit on both, but the City Lodge like
still feels like it hasn't moved,
it's
right?
It's kind of almost at the price I sold at.
For context, the Sun International share price in some cases, if I'm looking at it, is up 300% or so from things like the pandemic lows, right? City Lodge, granted, I mean, to go from 2 Rand up to 4 Rand is 100% gain if we look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, but Sun International went from 5 Rand to 45 Rand.
You see what I mean? You see? So has the stock been bearing the brunt of, and I don't know what it's been bearing the brunt of if we're saying it's been bearing the brunt, because it's just been going through.
Why is it so hated? It's a good
that's
question.
That's it.
Because it's an important thing. When you find a stock that you like and you think the market's overlooked it, that's well and good. The question you've got to ask yourself is, why is the market going to start looking at it?
Yes.
What is going to change?
Yes.
That's hugely important. And in this point, I mean, I don't know what's going to change for City Lodge. But to the point is that sort of between the 4 and 5, it is kind of trading that range. And if you pick it up close to the 4, you can quite possibly drop it close to the 5.
That's it, right? That could be a good range trade. Again, not financial advice. That's not what this show does. You know the disclaimers. We are sharing our thoughts and our opinions.
And a low double-digit PE, this is not expensive.
It's not. It really isn't, right? Perhaps there's something amiss there. Perhaps there's more that we need to be looking at.
It's paying a dividend.
And it's paying a dividend. Just keeps getting better, right? The gift that keeps on giving at 4 rand a share. Again, not financial advice, folks. Speak to your financial advisors if you're interested in that in that stock or in any other stock for that matter. That's where we're going to leave it. We're going to perhaps revisit some of these stocks at another time, but we've run out of time this time around. And before we go, we're going to leave you with an unfiltered opinion of the week because, well, those are important. This week's unfiltered opinion is not necessarily an opinion of our own, but it is something that has happened and we'd like to get your thoughts on it. We'd like to get everyone to just weigh in on it. Si, do you remember the non-profit known as Mold Empower Serve? MES. Does that ring a bell at all?
No.
Okay. And I don't expect it to, because it probably doesn't ring a bell with anyone out there. But if I were to tell you that this nonprofit had a 14-year partnership, now it starts to ring a bell, with KFC.
Ah.
And they were the nonprofit behind Adding Hope for
Two Rand. Two Rand Hopes.
Yes.
Mm.
They are currently undergoing some investigations for allegations of corrupt activity,
right,
to which KFC has confirmed that they've pulled the funding for the Add Hope project. So, the unfiltered opinion.
Does that mean I don't get harassed to give hope, or does the hope go to somebody else?
KFC, that's a question. Please let us know what happens
while
now.
While you're answering it, we'll have a couple of burgers with spicy cheese.
He missed, sorry, KFC, he missed it completely. Just a bucket. No, burgers, not snack burgers, a bucket. But yes, that's the unfiltered opinion. And it is around that Add Hope. It is around those sorts of initiatives. Those initiatives form an important part of supporting some of the most vulnerable members of society that we can find. And an entity like KFC to be able to support and sustain this initiative for 14 years, it does go a long way, right?
Yeah.
And
I always give hope. And then you hope that the hope gets to someone who needs hope. Because otherwise there is no hope.
That's all. That's all. Sai's just trying to give hope. That's all he wants to do. Right? Folks, that's our question to you. Not from our perspective, but from the perspective of what we've uncovered around the scandals. Is in a situation like this, where Sai wants to give hope and hope doesn't seem like it's been given, what do we do? That's the unfiltered opinion. That's where we're going to leave the show. Thanks for tuning in, folks. All of the conversations are curated for your viewing pleasure. Until next time, investing isn't hard. Try it. The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.